Following interviews and commentaries are for entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
It's time again for Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio with the latest news and conversation related to firearms and your Second Amendment rights. Sponsored by Rogers Auto Repair, Arctic RV, Auto Trim Design, and Frontier Outfitters. And now, Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
Welcome, listeners. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz, KFAR Radio. Please call in throughout the hour to join us, 458-8255, 458-TALK. What is on your mind about firearms today? And it's a lovely day in Fairbanks. The sky looks like it's going to rain anytime. Temperature is 40 degrees this morning. And here at the KFAR Broadcasting Station, Melissa Burnett is expertly running the board. Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate that. And she's keeping the Shooter Corner archives up to date for us. So if you miss a program, it should be accessible in the archives within a few days. Thank you again, Melissa, for all you do. And what is on our agenda today? Well, today we'll try to finish my story about my trip to Zimbabwe, Africa. It might take me a couple more sessions. But before that, I want to start on what will be a multi-week discussion about W.D.M. Bell, also known as Karamojo Bell, and his book, The Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter. And today I will set the stage and give some insight into Mr. Bell's personality using some research outside his book. And next week I will start discussing the stories in his book. The Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter is considered Mr. Bell's most important work. And also next week, I will finish up my discussion on my favorite knives from a couple weeks ago. Plus, I do want to discuss the Lapua and SK-22 long rifle ammunition and my new Arrowhead Tactical concealed carry clothing. So much to talk about. Announcements. Alaska Ammo is opening its new store this Saturday, September 23rd, and the new store is located at 340 Murher Avenue. And Alaska Ammo has remodeled the old Pier 1 building. And not only will the store be much larger, but they now have a shooting range for the public, for both public shooting, and they've got a classroom for classes. I believe the shooting range is 8 lanes total, and I am grateful for Alaska Ammo that they made such an investment in our community. And to make that news even better, Chuck Indereedon has partnered with Alaska Ammo to provide the Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit classes at Alaska Ammo's new facility. And what could be better? Chuck is the top instructor. Alaska Ammo built a first-class facility with a range and classroom, and the store is right there, guns, ammo, and gear. Now, Chuck Indereedon's upcoming Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit classes are the weekend of September 30th and October 1st, and then November 4th and 5th, and then December 9th and 10th for this year. I like the way Chuck has scheduled the concealed carry permit classes. The state of Alaska mandates 12 hours of instruction, and Chuck's weekend ACHP classes are noon to 4 on Saturday and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday, so you get to sleep late on Saturday. And another important class Chuck is offering before the end of the year is Defensive Handgun for the Armed Citizen. That's October 28 and 29 and December 16 and 17. You can take the Alaska Concealed Handgun Permit class not only to get your ACHP permit and your NICS exempt, that's the National Instant Background Check System designation, so that there is no wait period to purchase a firearm, but that class serves as a beginning pistol safety and operation class. And after you've taken that class, while what you learned operationally and about the laws are on your mind, turn around and sign up for Chuck's Defensive Handgun for the Armed Citizen class. And that will provide more intense training plus life scenarios based on real life situations. I personally went through this scenario training and it was an eye opener for me on what I needed to work on. Now, Chuck has also scheduled classes into 2024. All of those are listed on his website, c4traininggroup.com. And I will talk more about Chuck ethics classes in the coming weeks. If you want to be on Chuck Indereeden's mailing list or have any question about his classes, call Chuck at 844-966-4079 or go to his website and sign up for classes or ask to be on Chuck's mailing list. Again, c4traininggroup.com. And Glenn Miller's next NRA metallic cartridge reloading class is October 14. I think there's still just one opening left. Someone's got to fill that one opening. After that, Glenn has another reloading class scheduled January 6, 2024. He teaches those reloading classes once each quarter. And remember, folks, 2024 is an election year, and we all know what happens to firearms and ammunition in an election year. Yes, we cannot get them. So save yourself anxiety and grief. Learn to reload and start accumulating all of the components you need for the calibers that you shoot. I took Glenn's NRA metallic cartridge reloading class last fall, and I believe you will learn a lot and enjoy the class. Now, you can take Glenn's class without any knowledge of reloading and leave his class feeling confident you have properly learned the basics and really how to do this yourself and do it safely. So sign up at AIMCOM's website or call Glenn Miller at 907-347-1396 if you want to be in a future reloading class that isn't listed yet on the AIMCOM website. Just call Glenn. And Glenn's MASS, M-A-S-S, which stands for Miller's Action Speed Shooting, is going live again starting November 4th. It was very, very popular and filled every Saturday that he held it. I think it's once a month, and I will let our listeners know when registration on Practice Score is open for that November 4th session. So let me start on our multi-hour program on Mr. Bell. Mr. Bell is known for his skills as an elephant hunter in Africa. He's known as W.D.M. Bell or Walter Bell or Karamojo Bell. His full name is Walter Dalrymple Maitland Bell, and he was born September 8, 1880, and passed away June 30, 1954. Now, Bell was born in Scotland. He became an adventurer. He's known as a big game hunter in East Africa. And before cementing that reputation, he had joined the Yukon Gold Rush, and he actually hunted in the Dawson area. He served in the Canadian Mounted Rifles. He saw action in the Second Boer War. That was from 1899 to 1902. And the Second Boer War was fought between the British Empire and the Boer Republics over the British influence in South Africa. Bell enlisted in the British Royal Flying Corps during World War I, and he flew reconnaissance in what was then Tanganyika, and that's now Tanzania. And after that, he became a flight commander in Europe, flying Bristol fighters, which were two-seater biplanes used for reconnaissance. And I've got a little story about that from Christie's Auction House later on. And after the war, Bell continued his elephant ivory hunting adventures in Africa for the next 16 years. He hunted elephant in Kenya, Uganda, Ethiopia, Sudan, the Lato Enclave, French Ivory Coast, Liberia, French Congo, and Belgium Congo. And some of these areas were in constant conflict and war, but it said that Karamojo Bell was a gentleman hunter. He fostered good relations with the natives and provided meat and skins to the native tribes. And this is quoting from Wikipedia. Bell preserved a good working relationship with the native African peoples where he hunted, traded cattle for information as to where he could find good numbers of bull elephants. He believed that this cooperation with the local tribes was the main reason for his great success as an elephant hunter. He hunted in the warlike Karamojo area for 5 years without the killing of a single African in self-defense becoming necessary, unquote. And it said that Bell shot 1,011 elephants during his ivory career, all bulls except for 28 cows. And it is also written that Bell shot over 800 Cape Buffalo with the smaller caliber rifles. He also took all sorts of plains game. He hunted rhinoceros and lions, too. Now, from his experience, Bell developed a preference for using smaller calibers for elephant and perfected what we call today the Bell shot. and we will talk more about all these things. After Bell's service in World War I, he returned to hunting in Africa, but headed back to England at some point, intending to return in 1939, but he never did because his plans were interrupted by World War II. In World War II, Bell helped evacuate Allied soldiers from Dunkirk using his yacht, the Trenchmer. Bell and his wife retired to a 1,000-acre Highland estate in Scotland, where he published two books while involved in other endeavors, such as yachting. And one book I have published, the book I have, which is published in 1923, titled The Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter. The other book is titled Karamojo Safari. Now, Bell suffered, those were the two earlier books. Bell suffered a heart attack in 1947, spending his last days on his estate, and he was working on a third book called Bell of Africa. And Bell had just sent in the manuscript for Bell of Africa when a few days later, June 30th, 1954, he passed away from heart failure. So Bell of Africa was published 6 years later in 1960. And we're going to go to our first break. Stick with us for the rest of this story.
Where the bad men are, the only thing to guide you is an evening star. The roughest, toughest man by far was Ragtime Cowboy Joe. He got his name from singing to the cows and sheep. Every night they say he sings the herd to sleep in a bass voice rich and deep.
The only way to deal with weather on any hunt is to be ready for it before you go. Visit Frontier Outfitters, keeping hunters dry and comfortable for decades with rain gear by Helly Hansen, field wear by Scent Blocker, shirts, vests, coats, and pants by Browning, boots by Ganner and Lacrosse, socks by Smart Wool and Fox River. You're covered head to toe, warm and dry. Your successful hunt starts at Frontier today. Clothing to tents, camp gear, and more. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Who turned out the lights? Never get stuck in the dark with Auto Trim Design Moose Lights and backup lights on your vehicle. They're the best in the interior. See Auto Trim Design's wide variety of Vision X, Putco, and VLED lights that fit most vehicles. Stop in or give us a call, 456-8400, and we'll design the right setup that fits your lifestyle. Auto Trim Design's philosophy hasn't changed in over 20 years. We treat every customer the Alaskan way with honesty, integrity, and respect.
Customized by Auto Trim.
KFAR weather.
Chance for scattered showers today, otherwise overcast skies. High of 44, westerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy again tonight, chance for mixed precipitation, lows around 33. Cloudy skies tomorrow, mixed precipitation possible at times, high of 43. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and Melissa Burnett at the controls. KFAR Radio, please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today or anything we're talking about Mr. Bell's book, Elephant Hunting. Okay, the book I have, The Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter, was serialized in Britain's Country Life magazine, and that likely provided a wide audience for Bell's adventures. And what I would like to do is provide a short history of Bell's life, and then I would like to share portions of his book, The Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter, that are both educational and great stories. But first, I will tell you that if you have the money, back in 2019, Rigby did release a limited edition WDM Bell Highland Stalker rifle. And those Highland Stalkers are very nice. You can look them up on the web. On release, the price was $21,995 USD. So here's a quote from Safari Club on that. Paying homage to iconic British adventurer Karamojo Bell, London gunmaker John Rigby & Company has released a new limited edition WDM Bell model of their Highland Stalker rifle. The limited run of just 50 rifles is the first model in Rigby's new Heritage series, which will form part of a collector series over the forthcoming years. Based on the original 1928 Rigby rifle design, on the magazine floor plate is the engraving of WDMB as per Bell's original rifle. rifle. Plus, the rifle has a Rigby spoon bolt handle and Mauser flag safety, just like Bell's. Similarly, the rifle features a Mauser 98 action as well as an Ivorine front foresight and custom designed rear half moon sight regulated at 100, 300, and 400 yards as per the original rifle. It also comes with a spare interchangeable standard Rigby rear sight regulated at 65, 150, and 250 yards. Presented in a limited edition vintage style canvas case, the rifle comes with a limited edition print of Rigby ledger book where Bell's gun is listed, a Rigby knife, and a copy of newly previously unpublished stories by Bell, incidents from an elephant hunter's diary signed by all the Rigby gun makers involved in the production of the rifle. The rifle is available in 275 Rigby as per Bell's original rifle, unquote. Now, I am not knowledgeable enough about cartridges to make definitive statements. That is a good subject for Glenn Miller, if you're listening, or a few other of my friends who know about these things, and I suspect many of our listeners know these things too. But from my reading, to put things in perspective, the 275 Rigby and the 7x57mm Mauser are said to be the same. And I am always curious to know where a historic rifle might be. Is it in a museum or a private collection? What is the auction price? And how was that rifle described? So I Google sleuthed and found information about Bell's personal 275 Rigby. And you might be interested to read the article. You can read it in NRA Rifleman magazine online. The article is by Harry Selby, and it was posted on September 15th, 2010, and it's titled Karamoja Bell's 275 Rigby. So let me read the first few paragraphs and then the last couple of paragraphs, and you can Google it and read the rest. Quote, the year was 1956. Bob Rourke and I were standing at the customs desk in the old Nairobi airport building. He just arrived on a flight from London and brought two rifles, which we were about to clear through customs. His bringing rifles surprised me because he wasn't planning to hunt, having come out to Kenya on this trip only to collect material for an article about the winds of change blowing across Africa. When the gun cases were open, Bob lifted out a slim little Rigby rifle from one and handed it to me. What do you think of this, Haraka? He said, and Haraka is what he called his friend. And I looked down at the little rifle in my hands. It had seen plenty of honest use, but looked to be well cared for and in very good shape. Turn it over, Bob said, grinning. When I did so, I noticed an elongated silver plaque let into the stock where the monogram plate would normally be. It read, Mark R. Selby from Uncle Bob Rourke. And as I looked more closely at the little 275 rifle, I noticed some engraving on the magazine box cover. The inscription read WDMB. Could it stand for Walter Dalrymple Maitland Bell? Surely not, I thought. I looked up at Bob, my eyes asking the obvious question. That's right, Haraka, Bob said. You're holding Karamoja Bell's 275 Rigby. I visited Wesley Richards recently to order a 318 rifle, which you've always sung the praises of, and Malcolm Lyle, the boss man there, showed me two rifles which had arrived the previous day. They were from the Bell estate. The 275 Rigby you're now holding and a double 450-400 by Jeffrey, I bought both rifles on the spot for my godson, Mark. Bob was referring to my son, Mark, who was 4 years old at the time, unquote. What a lucky godson. And now let me read the last paragraph from the article. Apparently, Mark, the godson, is all grown up. And remember, the article was written in 2010, but Mark was only about 4 years old when the rifle was purchased for him in 1956. Quote, Mark eventually decided to dispose of the Rigby 275 through Holland & Holland of London, and we lost all trace of it for nearly 20 years, until quite recently when someone phoned Joe Coogan to say that he currently owned the rifle and wished to sell it. Mike Evans now owns Karamoja Bell's Rigby 275, and he brought it back to Botswana to use on safari in 2009. How wonderful to think that this unique little rifle returned to Africa yet again, and that its voice echoed through the African bush once more, unquote. So let me read two more paragraphs from that article. I mentioned earlier that Bell was a gentleman hunter and was able to work with tribal cultures. These two paragraphs from the NRA Rifleman Magazine article by Harry Selby well describe the situations that Karamojo Bell likely found himself in. About Bell hunting in Uganda, the Karamoja region, quote, "While still in his 20s, 15 years before I was born, Bell went there to hunt the great elephant bulls abundant in Karamoja, despite of the region's population of wild and warring native tribes. Bell had moved about freely in the Karamoja region with a small safari at the time when Swahili traders from the coast dared not set foot in the area with fewer than 300 guns. Several large, well-armed parties of traders had been completely wiped out through the primitive intrigue. Natives pretending to be trading would, in fact, wait for a given signal, at which time each warrior plunged his spear into the nearest Swahili in order to steal all of their trade goods. Bell had earned the respect and friendship. Bell had earned the respect and the friendship, and finally, total acceptance of the warlike Karamojan people. This was due partly to his fearlessness when dealing with a herd of bull elephants bearing down on him, relying on braining the one directly in front of him, but mostly from occasions when his safari was confronted by a group of belligerent warriors, tall, jet black, naked, and armed to the teeth, carrying a shield, two 10-foot-long razor-sharp spears, a circular knife on each wrist, and wicked hooks attached to rings on the finger." And I just want to interject here. I looked up about those knives, and those ones that were on their finger were used to gouge people's eyes out. I'm sure that's something you wanted to know. These would be very scary warriors. Bell would face them down without showing the slightest emotion or fear. The situation never deteriorated to the point that Bell was ever forced to use his rifle. Bell was also supremely fit with tremendous stamina and endurance, qualities necessary for survival and for which the Karamojong as a primitive people greatly admired. But mainly they stood in awe and possibly dread of his small but deadly fire stick, which, when fired without smoke, just tiny shining bullets, causing instant death to the largest bull elephant, and often laid low a group of bulls in a matter of seconds. These natives had never seen anything like this before. When the Swahilis tried to hunt elephants, they poured copious amounts of powder down the gullets of their muzzleloaders, then rammed down whatever projectiles were available to produce huge clouds of smoke, but rarely dead elephants. The Karamojan affectionately named Bell Red Man. The big men who owned vast numbers of cattle even offered Bell their daughters as wives, end quote. And you know, this story reminds me of the power of suggestion bestowed on the American Indian tribes by demonstrations Lewis and Clark did with their Ghirardoni air rifle. So this is just another piece of information we should know before I get into Bell's book. It is a quote from an article published at the auction house Christie's for an extensive archive of Bell's original drawings and manuscripts. And you can find the article at Christie's.com. The lot number is 4077437. So it's at Christie's.com, lot 4077437. And there you will see the drawing of the hunter and the elephant with the angle of the Bell shot that I will quote about shortly. Unfortunately, my book is a reprint published by Big Game Books, and it doesn't contain these drawings, but you can see that one online. And here is a quote from that Christie's auction. Let's see, we've got some time. Yeah, Bell's first book, The Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter, is considered by many to be the greatest of all elephant books by the greatest of all elephant hunters, a gripping series of elephant hunting essays and stories during the glory days of Bell's career. Bell's approach to elephant hunting, systematic and revolutionary. He studied the anatomy of elephants in order to establish the trajectory of bullets from any angle. And Wanderings of an Elephant Hunter includes diagrams of Bell's perfect shot placement, unquote. And that's what you'll have to look at the Christie site online to see that picture. And so now we've established a little bit about Karamojo Bell's personality, adventurous, yet not at all careless, but rather systematic in his hunting endeavors. He was a gentleman and friend of the native tribal people where he hunted. He was respected by them. Bell fought in the Boer War. He committed to duty during World War I. He risked his life saving survivors at Dunkirk during World War II using his Stilhold 37-ton racing yacht. I will read one more paragraph from Christie's article about Bell as a pilot in World War I because it relates to a personality trait of Bell's that we can all respect. Quote, during World War I, Bell again volunteered and became a fighter pilot in modern-day Tanzania. There he gained fame for flying without an observer in the cockpit since he thought that they blocked his view when he tried to shoot at the Germans with his big boar elephant hunting rifle, unquote. And that's the end of what I'm going to talk about today, Karamojo Bell. And we will start looking at his book, all the chapters in his book and all his stories and his essays intensely next week. And we're going to go to our half-hour break. When we get back, I'll talk more about my trip.
Don't miss the Mark Levin Show weekdays from 3 to 6 right here.
Fox News, I'm John Saucier. House Republicans trying to move forward with a Pentagon funding bill. The vote failed Tuesday. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, are you concerned?
Time's not up. I got time. It'll be a bigger success.
But House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says he doesn't want a government shutdown to happen, believes the House needs to pass a funding bill to keep the government open.
But we need the extreme MAGA Republicans to get their act together in the civil war that's happening on the Republican side of the aisle. That's paralyzing Congress.
There's some House Republicans demanding billions more in spending cuts for the 24 fiscal year. The Democratic majority in the Senate say a bill loaded with conservative priorities won't pass the chamber without some sort of deal. The government will shut down by the end of September. So a lot of pressure there on Capitol Hill as America is listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
An Alaska communications company that had its underwater fiber optic line severed by Arctic sea ice this summer has completed repair operations and restored service, according to company officials. Quintillion, an Anchorage-based company that provides high-speed internet and cell service to rural Alaskan communities, said that the undersea line had been repaired months after being severed in an ice scouring incident along the Beaufort Sea. Ice scouring is when Arctic sea ice scrapes along the ocean floor. The damaged line cut the company's primary internet and cell service to roughly 20,000 Alaskan customers, and Quintillion initially said the repairs would take 6 to 8 weeks, but later updated the repair estimate to close to 10 weeks as lingering sea ice and difficult weather conditions pushed back the final fix date. Ultimately, it took over 14 weeks to finish the line, and it's expected to take another 10 days for crews to bury the cable underground. The incident impacted many North Slope communities, including Nome, Kotzebue, Point Hope, Wainwright, and Utqiagvik. Many people in those communities were forced to rely on backup internet via satellite and
streaming microwave. Live online at KFAR660.com.
Ride into winter with a friend. Your Snowway snowplow. Snowway plows are stronger, smarter, the most reliable plow in the industry. Their wireless controls eliminate messy dash installations and provide the ultimate in-cab flexibility. Better yet, Snowway's patented down-pressure hydraulics increase your plowing efficiency by 30%. The drive-in mount system hooks up in seconds, and their structural plow warranty is the best in the business. Stop by Rogers Auto Repair, your Snowway dealer on Dale Road near the airport, or call 479-6665.
Ben here at Auto Trim Design. Summer is moving down the road, and that means it's time to start getting ready for winter. At Auto Trim Design, we have something for everyone. Get your remote start with drone mobile, moose lights, heated seats, seat covers, tonneau covers, toppers, WeatherTech floor liners, and more before the snow flies. Auto Trim Design is your one-stop shop for all your vehicle accessory needs, located at 2550 South Cushman Street under the huge American flag. Stop in or give us a call at 456-8400.
Customized by Auto Trim.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and Melissa Burnett at the controls, KFAR Radio. Please call in at 458-8255, 458-TALK, and let us know what's on your mind about firearms today. So I want to finish up about my trip to Zimbabwe, and I don't know if we're going to have time to finish. If I don't, there'll just be a little left for next week. So for those of you who haven't been listening or keeping up, I went to Zimbabwe the early part of August this year, and I got about halfway through my story last week, and that portion will be in the Shooter's Corner archives, and it will be dated September 14th. As I mentioned, I did not hunt on this trip. My goal was to visit the area I would like to hunt in and make friends. And this would provide me with a small network of people that I would know when I go back to hunt and do some more sightseeing. So last week when I talked about my preparation for the trip, and I talked about where I was headed, and then I began to fill in some detail. So just a very quick recap. I will use actual place names this time. I don't think I did last week. Once in Harare, Zimbabwe.
We do have a caller.
Caller, you're on the line.
Hello.
Yes, you are on the line with Laura.
Oh, great. Great. I really like your story about Mr. Bell and his being able to cooperate with the locals.
Yeah, that was
their life better. I have some information that is not well known, that is causing hunters and locals to have problems here in Alaska.
Oh, okay.
And one of the thing is, you know, a lot of people now navigate by map apps on their phone.
Right.
And those map apps are wrong. Most of them haven't been updated in over a decade.
Yes.
And that is causing people to come out into places where they want to hunt, and they're trespassing on private land, especially in the well-known Bacobi area, which has just become popular since they put a road sign up there.
Okay,
People are coming in and using their map apps on their phones, and they think they're in the wilderness, but instead, they're camping on private property, shooting across private property, shooting along roads, and stuff like that. I think it's important for your listeners to know that those maps apps are inaccurate, and I think it's on purpose. For we can't find troopers that will come out and confront the trespassers.
Interesting.
Here we are with the local residents. And who are armed people, and mostly NRA members,
mm-hmm.
and the hunters, who are also armed people, mm-hmm. and also NRA members.
Right.
Yeah, and so it looks like somebody is trying to start an armed confrontation in our area between hunters and the landowners, who are also hunters. And it's been told to me that it's set up that way so you can get these people to have a gunfight and not cooperate. And it all comes down to, A, not realizing that those app maps are not accurate, way out of date, do not show the private property. And they're usually quite inaccurate for GPS locations because they're on a different modem. And secondly, the lack of prosecution, the troopers won't even go out to a call in that area because of the prosecutors won't prosecute it. They say, oh, it's just a little thing. It's just a small thing. Sounds like a setup.
Interesting. I hope there's no gunfights. I hope everybody solves this amicably.
I hope so.
With a town meeting or something similar in the area. But wasn't this, I can't remember his last name, Jeff King. Didn't he some years ago have a problem with not reading the maps correctly, and I think it was the wildlife law enforcement.
Yes, he went on the national park.
Yeah, yeah. And I do know that those maps, you hear people driving off of dead-end cliffs. I mean, you can, you have to check a little more carefully than
I think it's important for the satellite maps that are using them, that they're not accurate and they're not up to date at all. And there will be confrontations, and I'm talking to the hunters and the landowners to, like, keep your cool. There's nothing they would like better than for a bunch of hunters and landowners and RA people all on the same side of the aisle to get into confrontations.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can't imagine this is any type of conspiracy. I don't know who in the world would do that. The mapping people, I don't know how they keep their satellite maps up to date. Actually, I do know some people that might know that, but I just think this is the circumstance of the technology we're using and the people doing the hunting not checking more carefully and just assuming that their electronics are correct.
Yeah, they believe it, but I'm not saying a conspiracy. I'm not going to put anything past the anti-gun people, you know, what they would do.
I believe that
people are putting too much faith in those app maps, and for most urban and suburban people, and they get out into to the west out here, and they think they're in the wilderness, and they look at their app, and their app says, yeah, this is state land. But when they get up into the Kobe area, you know, that's 100 square miles of private property.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
A lot of it's not marked because it's been burned over. And we had hundreds and hundreds of people picking mushrooms on private property, camping, setting up, building campfires on a super dry year.
Yeah.
We've had two fires in a row this summer and last summer.
I know people that live in your area. Yep, yep. You know, I don't know how to solve this problem besides signage, but I'm wondering if you could contact Fish and Game, and although they probably already know about the problem, explain it again to them, and maybe this is something that needs to go in their education classes.
Yeah, it should probably be in the education classes. We've been with touch with Fish and Game and some troopers. We're getting mixed reactions.
Okay.
But also, it's just, I called you because everybody listens to you.
Oh, thank you. thank you very much.
If the word gets out that, hey, your apps are not, that's the main problem right there.
Yeah.
Is that the apps are inaccurate and people believe that they're on state land, and, you know, they don't believe that somebody out there could actually own a square mile.
Well, and you actually saw a lot of these arguments with the trails thing that happened with the borough. You heard a lot of these kind of testimonies, so it's really a thing.
And, you know, something else, because I've often wondered why we don't talk about more of this up here, but there's a Safari Club chapter in Anchorage, and it's not only for international hunting, it's for Alaska hunting, and they support Alaska hunting, and they get into the politics of Alaska hunting. And I think they have a publication. I'm not sure if it's once a month or every other month, but this might be something that, you know, an article in their magazine or even a talk at one of their meetings would be a good thing to do. If you look at Safari Club International, you can find the contact for the Anchorage chapter or the Alaska chapter.
Uh-huh.
That would get the word out. And however I can help.
Also, well, I don't know exactly what to do. We're trying to spread the word as much as possible so people understand. You know, we had the same problem, mushroom pickers. People looking for morels.
Right.
And they're on the apps, and they're all over the place, too.
And I don't know how you tell. Are they young people or older people that are doing this mostly?
All ages.
Okay.
Parents and their children to old people. It's, you know, mushroom pickers is everybody, just like.
Yeah. Hunters. No, I meant getting on private land, because older hunters should know this from years of using paper maps and understanding how this works. The younger people are all into the technology, and I would suspect some don't use paper maps at all, or don't go down and check where they can and can't go.
Don't, and that's what firefighters don't use paper maps, and that's why they're always lost in our area. It takes them 3 days to find the fire.
That's funny.
Follow the smoke.
Well, I appreciate your call. And if you want to call us again in the future and give us an update, and do call the Safari Club. I can't think of any other organization that could help. Yeah, I can, but not, the name of it's escaping me right now. Oh, darn. Down in... what is our? Let me think about it, and it'll come to me. There's another organization, the Outdoor Council, the Alaska Outdoor Council is another one that that publishes a magazine. And you know, all you can do is chip away at it. If law enforcement can't do much about it, then all you can do is chip away at it and keep the guns in the holsters or the scabbards.
Yes,
it's going to be a long discussion, but I appreciate you calling in about it, and you're welcome to call in anytime and give us updates, because it's an important issue.
Thank you for giving me the time.
Thank you for calling. Okay.
Bye. And we are actually due for our next
break.
Okay,
let's go to our break, and we'll talk about the trip around the corner.
Whether you're flying or boating into your favorite fishing hole or just driving to the lake, make Frontier Outfitters your first stop for all the fishing gear, licenses, permits, and stamps you'll need. Frontier's extensive fishing department has the conventional, fly, or saltwater tackle for every game fish in Alaska's streams, rivers, lakes, and ocean habitats. Rods and reels, lures and natural bait, lines and nets, dip netting supplies, even sunglasses. Frontier Outfitters has what you need for your successful trip, plus marine parts and equipment downstairs at Century Hardware. Frontier Outfitters, for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Who turned out the lights? Never get stuck in the dark with Auto Trim Design Moose Lights and backup lights on your vehicle. They're the best in the interior. See Auto Trim Design's wide variety of Vision X, Putco, and VLED lights that fit most vehicles. Stop in or give us a call, 456-8400, and we'll design the right setup that fits your lifestyle. Auto Trim Design's philosophy hasn't changed in over 20 years. We treat every customer the Alaskan way, with honesty, integrity, and respect.
Weather brought to you by GCR. Find Bridgestone and Cooper tires for every car, truck, motor, home, and SUV you drive. Everything you tow. GCR tires and service. The Tire Guys. Taming the Alaskan Road. Van Horn at Cushman.
KFAR. Weather.
Cloudy skies today with a chance for scattered showers. Daytime highs approaching 44. Westerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Chance for mixed precipitation. Lows around 33. Mixed precipitation possible at times again tomorrow. Highs around 43. Cloudy skies expected. And that's your weather on KFAR, 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM and 660 AM. Streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Welcome back. This is Shooter's Corner with Laura Berkowitz and Melissa Burnett at the controls. KFAR Radio, please call in at 458-8255-458-TALK and let us know what's on your mind about anything that has to do with firearms. I really appreciate the gentleman just calling in and talking about what's happening in the Kobe area and probably in general with the GPSs. And I'm going to put my thinking cap on when I get home. And besides the Outdoor Council and the SCI chapter in Anchorage, if I can think of any more organizations who have publications or can get this word out to educate people, I will.
Can I say just real quick?
Yes,
now
yes.
You want to get to your story.
Oh, no. Yeah. This is, yeah.
Referring to that gentleman, this is also why local elections are important when it comes to the borough assembly.
Yeah.
This is why these things really do make a difference. And property rights to many people are infinite. And so if you want to do something about this, you need to find solutions. Why local elections? It's very important. October 3rd is the local election. Early voting is going on right now.
Yeah.
Tammy Wilson, this is her bread and butter. So
yeah.
I would call her. I definitely would. And remember, Tammy Wilson, October 3rd.
Okay.
A little plug for her. I know.
Okay.
Sorry, Laura.
No, that's okay. That's okay. Melissa's passionate about this, and I'm really glad you are, because we need some good people to take care of these things in our area. And I will, like I said, put my thinking cap on and see what I can come up with. But it is an important issue. So I will talk a little more and, you know, I can talk about my trip. We don't have to finish it today here and there. I think what we just talked about today earlier is much more interesting than what I'm going to talk about. But let me just use the actual place names where I was. So once in Harare, Zimbabwe, we went from the main airport in Harare, which is the capital city, to my friend's home in Mvuri. And I don't know why a lot of towns' names start with an M, a consonant, but it's MV, Mvuri. And between Harare and Mvuri, there's one town you can get supplies, and that is Mazoe. And so we passed through Mazoe. And after spending 2 days at my friend's home and visiting his parents and one of the farms he managed, I think I talked a little bit about that last week, we headed out at 5:30 the next morning to a cottage in Lake Kariba. And leaving that early avoids city traffic and the lorry traffic on the roads, plus it puts us close to Lake Kariba early enough to spot game. So it's early in the morning and late evening are the best times to spot game. The weather's cooler and the animals come out to drink. And on the way to Lake Kariba, we stopped at the Lion's Den, and that's a popular road stop and a gathering place. And we drove through Karoi and came upon a fork in the road in Makuti. And the reason I'm using this is I'm pretty sure there's some hunters out there that have been to this area in Zimbabwe and hunted there that are listening to the program. So going south on that fork took us to Lake Kariba, and after spending a few days at Lake Kariba, we backtracked to the fork at Makuti, and then headed northerly to the Shirindu area and the Zambezi River, where we stayed at Tiger Safari. And at Tiger Safari, we hired a boat captain to take us on the Zambezi River to fish for tigerfish and to watch the wild animals in the water along the banks. And there were plenty of wild animals on the Tiger Safari cottage compound where we stayed. For those of you listening who have been to Zimbabwe to hunt, where I stayed near Shirindu is close to Manipools. That's a national park. It's dense with wild animals, including lion and leopard. And Shirindu is also close to the Harangui Safari area, and it's not far from the Sapi and the Chiwar Safari areas. The Chirara Safari area is just south of Makuti, and it borders Lake Kariba. And the Matsudana National Park is just south, too, and that borders Lake Kariba. So that entire area is just rich with animals and many individual safari concessions. So as we drove from Mvuri northwest to Lake Kariba and Tiger Safari, the changes in the scenery, the trees, the ground cover, the way that the people live also changed. And it's true that Africa smells different. The air smelled dusky as we got away from the city, but as we approached the more wild areas, the air smelled a mixture of sweetness and smoke. And my friend told me that in that area, there is a plant that gives off that sweet smell early in the morning and late in the evening. And it's commonly called a sweet potato plant, but I don't know if it was the same as cultivated sweet potatoes. And we're not about to leave our vehicle and explore in the bush without firearms. There's more donkey carts. Many people in that area do not have cars. People live in small thatched structures, some round and some square, but they're all one-room affairs. And groups of these compose a compound, and the compounds are surrounded by a thatch fence to keep the animals out.
We have a caller.
We have another caller. All right, caller, you are on the line.
Hello, this is Randy.
Hi, Randy. I was wondering,
does the word Rhodesia, which was the name of that country,
right,
of Zimbabwe, Southern Rhodesia was called, does that name appear anywhere on some old sign or some brand of roasted coffee, Rhodesian roast, or
I didn't notice it. I didn't notice it. And honestly, when I tried to talk to my friend's parents and actually my friend too about the Mugabe era and what happened, and you know, they all lost their farms, they all lost all their land, and friends were killed, and nobody would talk about it. And so Rhodesia seems to have been erased other than written history. I didn't see, of course, I wasn't all over the country. I was just in a small part of it. I didn't see anything like that.
One other question,
yeah,
I was going to ask is, what is their basic staple? Do they eat rice, potatoes?
What's their maize.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I was never, I saw pizza, but I never saw bread. So, you know, pizza dough. I never saw bread. They eat that sadza, or sadza, S-A-D-Z-A, and it's maize that is boiled in water. I've tried making some when I got home, and it's boiled with water till it's really thick and super thick, and then you put a blob of it on your plate, and then you roll it in a roll with your fingers and make a thumb impression, and then you scoop up whatever juicy things are on your plate. And so it's not like baked bread. It's sedza. And that's good. So it's maize is their main crop, maize and tobacco. And let's see, I don't know if I talked about this last week or not, but I think I did. The way when they took the land from the white farmers, then there wasn't anybody that could farm the land. And not only that, but the people that took those farms, instead of farming it, destroyed. They burnt the buildings. They cut down all the fruit trees. They went back to their tribal ways and destroyed what was taken and given to them. So now, although some land is being farmed, there's a lot of land that isn't being farmed, and so there's now a new program there where the white people, and I guess any people, they don't just need to be white, but can apply, sort of like a homesteading act, where they can apply for land, and if they farm that land for a certain amount of time, they will be able to keep it, because the point is to get the land into production. The people don't have enough to eat, and they don't have anything to export. And there's a lot of other things going wrong. There's a lot of, money disappears. And the land is there, and it can be farmed if people, they can't afford to buy the land. So they're putting this new program in. But anyway, it's a long way of answering. Maize is the main crop that people eat.
And I'll let you go, but it just popped in my mind. The name Ian Smith. I think that was the
Ian Smith. Yep,
before they changed over. Okay, well,
And I'll one of these days I'll give a list of really good books to read. That was a terrible time in their history, and a lot of people lost their lives. And it wasn't just the Africans. It wasn't just African politics. The Russians were involved. The Chinese were involved. There were, and I'm sure we may have been involved. There were a lot of outside influences fighting in all these different levels and supporting the Africans that were fighting against each other. It's a truly interesting story, and so maybe another time. So let me move on a little bit. Thanks for calling in, Randy, and actually thanks for calling in about Karamojo Joe, Karamojo Bell. That puts us on a whole new trajectory here for the next few weeks. So now what I wanted to say about these compounds, these people live in these small huts, and they're into compounds that are all fenced. And some of the compounds had schools that were built out of cement blocks, because cement is what they have to build with. And some of the professional hunting safari groups, they provide the money to build these schools. And that's one way they pay back to the community from the money we spend hunting. You know, I talked about last week, they monetized the animals. The safari brings in the money, and the tribes and the country lets the animals be taken by people who pay for them, and that money goes back into the community. So many of the poor people, they're living on the outskirts, and they work in those maize and tobacco fields. And if they're not in a donkey cart, they're walking. There's seemingly no rush for them to get anywhere. They're walking slowly in the heat along the highway. It's along the roads to wherever they're going. The women do walk perfectly upright and gracefully. They have their baskets on their head, just like we've all seen in the photos. I left off, I think, last week, saying that we had arrived at Lake Kariba, and the cottage we stayed at was owned by a Zimbabwe fisherman's organization that my friend Peter belongs to. So for the four of us, it was only $40 for 3 days to stay there. So both at the area that we stayed at Lake Kariba, and later at Tiger Safari, and at other group areas we visited, there were maids and groundkeepers who live on site, and and they live in compounds of thatched huts surrounded by thatched fence, and there's holes in all these fences, and chickens are everywhere. The chickens escape during the day and free range. Lake Kariba is a man-made lake, and that's another story in and of itself. It's 139 miles long and 25 miles wide, and obviously I only saw a very small part of it where I stayed. And there are houseboats for rent. And you can rent a houseboat with an experienced captain. And the cost is about $1,000 U.S. a day. So it's something it's a big houseboat. It's something you would split with a number of people. And someday I would like to see the entire shoreline and all the animals around Lake Kariba. So at Lake Kariba, the zebras sleep close to the cabins, and they feel safe from predators closer to people. In the morning, I was awakened by noisy hippos in the water and zebras fighting and playing and snorting outside the cottage and the screaming of the ever-present monkeys and the birds. I mean, it is a symphony and a very loud one. The elephants are never far. We did game drives early each morning and late each evening to see the animals, and one must develop patience with elephants. They slowly across the road, one, then another comes out of the brush, and then another, and maybe a family of six or seven, and this can take 10 or 15 minutes, and the cars have to wait until the elephants pass before the drivers continue, because all one elephant has to do is step on or sit on your vehicle, and you aren't going anywhere.
10 seconds.
10 seconds. Okay. Well, folks, this has been a very interesting program, and thank you, Randy, for calling in, and thank you to the gentleman. He didn't give us his name, but talking about the Kobe area and the GPS coordinate problem. And I will continue talking about Mr. Bell next week and bits and pieces about my trip, and I want to get to the Lapua and 22 ammunition, too, so it'll be a great program next week. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone.